Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up. And we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. This is Marissa and I'll be with you for the next hour. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and graphic discussion of deaths in custody. First up on the show, we will be interviewing Farida, who is one of the rally organisers for a rally that's happening tomorrow. And this rally will be addressing police powers that are going in through Parliament. And basically the Allan government is about to introduce a bill aimed at cracking down on the right to protest. And then after that, we will be having Stacey into the studio. Stacey has lived experience of prison, and she was also a speaker at the Snap Action last week in the Bail Saves Lives rally that was organised by Flat Out and Vels. And she'll be here joining us and speaking about not just prison but also the bail laws and how that impacts on marginalised communities. And of course we all know that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are severely affected as well, and that there have been more deaths in custody because of the bail laws. So we will be speaking shortly with Farida in regards to the protest, and I'm going to be asking her some questions also about the designated areas that have been created by police as well. So Farida has long COVID and is fighting for the long COVID community. Part of that means standing up to the proposed anti-protest laws, which include a mask ban. And she is a Defend Dissent Coalition organiser. And tomorrow the rally is entitled Defend Dissent, our right to protest. Hello, Farida. Welcome.
Hello.
Lovely to have you. Can you just give a little bit of a basic introduction of yourself first?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have long COVID. I've been sick for 2.5 years. And I largely blame the government for that, because when they told everyone that Omicron is a less severe version of the disease, that sort of lured everybody into a false sense of security. And I got drawn into that. And I got sick, and I've been sick ever since. So I'm very angry about that. Now I think they are playing further into COVID denial the state government is, by proposing an anti-mask law, which would stop me from being able to exercise my right to protect myself from reinfection, which could physically destroy me. And it also affects, of course, a lot of people with disabilities
Absolutely, and it sounds like you're very upset about it. So you're from the Defend Dissent Coalition. We will talk about masks again in a minute, but can you tell us a little bit about the Defend Dissent Coalition and why the coalition was created, and what are some of the concerns?
Well, the Defend Dissent Coalition is, I think, a very exciting group of people. It's actually over 50 organisations have teamed up to form this thing. And, we've just all come together to combat these anti-protest laws. It's really cool. And, sorry, what was the second part of your question?
More about why the coalition came together.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we've all come from different directions for different... We oppose these proposed laws for different reasons. Like, there's people from the environmental movement who've, you know, locked onto things, and the laws threaten, people who lock onto things. And, yeah, especially the laws are targeting the Palestine movement. So, yeah, the Palestine movement's very supportive of the Defend Dissent Coalition. And, yeah, like, Aboriginal people, of course, like, the issues there, like, the way police treat Aboriginal people is just abhorrent. And so, yeah, Aboriginal people are, I think, more risk of being targeted under these laws. So Aboriginal groups have come, the warriors of Aboriginal resistance has come behind the Defend Dissent Coalition too. So, yeah, it's a very exciting, very broad coalition of lots of different groups.
Indeed, and I think there have already been some laws prior to this proposed bill that created designated areas where police could actually stop and search.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just stopping and searching. It's also, there's an anti-mask law also embedded in that law too. They can ask you to remove your mask within that designated zone. So that was passed in 2017. And yeah, it shouldn't still be on the books now. It's ridiculous that it's still on the books. And they still use this law. They've been using that law to target the transgender movement in particular lately. They've been declaring designated zones when trans counter rallies against the TERFs are declared. And, people have got in trouble over that. And it's really quite disgusting. The police are attacking those rallies.
Yeah, look, I've been doing quite a lot of coverage about that actually over the last year or so. In particular, the way that Nazis have been targeting very anti, it's transphobic and it's homophobic as well.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Can you tell us where the rally is going to be held tomorrow?
Well, it's going to be outside Parliament House, and it's going to be at 5:30.
So it's going to be at 5:30, and it's going to be a protest against this it's not really a proposed bill, is it? I think it's nearly there, isn't it? Isn't it nearly a reality?
Well, no, they haven't. This is the first time it's going to be actually tabled in Parliament.
Right.
So, I've got that wrong.
That's right.
We don't actually know when it's going to be tabled in Parliament. We thought it was going to be tabled in Parliament this week, like in August, but now we've heard more recent news that maybe that's not the case. So they still need to do a bunch more consultation and stuff before they can introduce this bill. But the thing is, there's such a moral panic at the moment in the media about it that it makes sense to have a protest now. Like, they're preparing the ground to pass this law at the moment, with like Gillian Segal and the whole stuff around anti-Semitism, and the way they played that Nazi march through Melbourne the other day. Now we've got to counter that media moral panic that they're whipping up about. You know, we have to ban face masks. We have to bring in these tough news laws against protests. We're pushing back against that tomorrow.
Okay, so tell us about the mask. The mask removal, like, is it true then that this bill, a lot of it will be about getting rid of symbols like flags and masks?
Yeah. So the symbols thing, that's they want to introduce new laws against so-called terrorist symbols. Like, the government keeps a list of organisations that are banned terrorist organisations, and they want to. But, you know, the thing is, who is the Australian government to decide who is a terrorist organisation and what's a legitimate national liberation movement, like, for example, the Kurdistan Workers' Party. I don't know if we can call them a terrorist organisation, but they're on the list. And, yeah, Kurdish people have been unfairly targeted because they're on the list. So the masks, though. So where do I begin? Having long COVID and being in a COVID wave right now, it's very, very scary. Like, I have friends with long COVID who've been reinfected, and it is after years of recovery, being reinfected has taken them right back to square one, right back to as sick as they were at the beginning of their illness. And, you know, this stops us from recovering, to not be able to mask. And, yeah, it's just very, very scary. It's just appalling to use this as a way to crack down on protests too, like to pick on the most vulnerable people at the protests, to pick on them as a way to, like, disperse the protests. Yeah. It's just horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I am, in my research for today's show, I'm kind of a little bit at a loss as to why the government would want to ban masks anyway.
It is weird, isn't it? It is really weird after they made masks compulsory in, what was it, 2021?
Yeah.
And now they want to ban them, like they don't at protests. It just shows that our government, like, they don't really have any principles. I don't think they even really cared about COVID in the first place. They just do whatever's convenient to them. Who knows what they're thinking, really? I don't understand their logic. But, I think they see this as a way to, like, crack down on protests by attacking the most vulnerable people at the protest.
Dividing and conquering communities has happened over many, many years. I mean, it happened with the Black Panther movement, didn't it, in America?
Yeah.
And they're trying to squash a lot of movements in Australia as well. And in particular, you were speaking before about how Aboriginal people are often targeted. I suppose a question for listeners, really, to see if you and I can talk about it, is why do we need to introduce these laws, anti-protest laws, because there are already laws in place to arrest people?
That's absolutely right. And actually, the existing laws are too repressive already. And like, as you referred to, that 2017 law, the Crimes Legislation Public Order Amendment Act, it's called, that should have never been passed. It's, the consequences have been terrible.
An ethical dilemma here, Farida, is what about, let's use the Nazis as an example. They marched through the streets early in the morning.
Yep.
And I heard Jacinta Allen speaking about the fact that these goons need to be arrested and that there's going to be laws coming through pretty soon to arrest these people. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I think there's a lot wrong with that statement. First of all, if they want to target Nazis, they can make specific laws to target Nazis. They don't need to make blanket laws to target everybody wearing a face mask. And I think, I've heard from lawyers that there are already existing laws in place that they could have used to have dealt with that Nazi march. But police, for some reason, chose not to exercise their ability to exercise those laws. I think them using that fascist march as an excuse to crack down on totally justified movements of the people, like for healthcare, for housing, for Aboriginal people, for, you know, the environment, for Palestine, for all these things, like, it doesn't make any sense. These are two completely different things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And my worry is that Australia is becoming a nanny state, that you've got all these police powers coming in, and I worry that, everything, every place, all our streets are going to be designated areas soon forever.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe. I hope not. But, yeah, in any case, this law would set a bad precedent in that direction, certainly. I think if you want to combat fascism, like, the government would be better off encouraging masks rather than banning them. Like, when you think about it, fascism thrives off of COVID denial. Like, we've seen that under the lockdowns. And also, if you want to, you don't fight fascism by giving the police extra powers to be more fascist. That makes zero sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Tell
us about your experience as a person with a disability and COVID, and how you would be affected as someone with long COVID if your mask had to be removed.
Well, I would be very, very scared of, I mask anywhere and everywhere because, I want to be able to recover. Long COVID is a horrible, horrible, horrible condition. It's the worst experiences I've ever had in my life, and I never, ever want to go through it again. If I were to get reinfected, that means I would go through the most traumatic experience of my life again, even to reinfection by being ordered to take off my mask. That for me is very, very scary. But actually under the current designated zone law, I think you can say to the police, I'm not going to remove my mask, but I'm going to leave the area. So you can actually exit the designated zone under that law instead of removing your mask. So that's what I would do. However, I don't think it's fair that I would have to do that. I think, I have a right to protest as much as the next person. Yeah, it's discriminatory against disabled people if we have to leave an area if we can't protest.
Absolutely, and I wanted to talk to thank you so much for sharing that with us. Interestingly, I'm quite interested to also hear a little bit more from you about how you were saying that denial of COVID and fascism go hand in hand. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, actually, I think this is maybe something I'd like to understand a bit more myself.
Sure. Like,
we saw this under the COVID lockdowns, that there was that freedom movement that came up, and actually that was largely led and orchestrated by fascists. Like, they saw the discontent in society around the lockdowns and around the vaccine mandates, and they saw a political opportunity, and they jumped on it. And, fascism was growing in this country prior to that for a few years, but it really ballooned under those lockdowns. And so, I think COVID is such a horrible thing that people don't want to think about it. Especially now, people want to forget COVID completely. And so, but that COVID denial is abandoning disabled and elderly people and vulnerable people. It's actually a philosophy that human life is expendable, that, we can just die and that's fine. we all ignore COVID. We all just pretend it doesn't there. We all just let heaps of people get disabled and die. Like, that is fascism at its core. Like, that core value of fascism, that human life is expendable. And that applies, I think, to the racism in fascism and transphobia in fascism. Yeah.
And ableism too.
Absolutely, ableism, yeah.
It's been so lovely chatting with you, Farida, and you've been so generous with your time and everything. If you were going to advise people to go to this protest tomorrow, what would you say to them? Why would you tell them that they need to come?
Well, I would say that you need to be there because this impacts everybody. This impacts you. Like with rising fascism in the world and the COVID pandemic and global warming and genocide in Gaza and Aboriginal deaths in custody and all of the horrible things going on right now. This is a very, very important time in human history to be protesting. Maybe it's never been more important than right now to be protesting. And absolutely, we have to protect the right to protest if we're, you know, going to get through this very, very difficult time in human history. We all need to be there for one reason or another.
And so what about speakers? Who will be speaking tomorrow?
Well, we've got a stellar lineup of 8 people and a few musicians too. So we have Catherine Cropsey from the Greens, who's tabling our petition in Parliament. We've got me. We've got Uncle Robbie Thorpe. We've got Mai Saif from Free Palestine Melbourne. We've got, who else have we got?
That's all right.
A mental blank.
Yeah. No, but you've actually given a really good cross section of speakers, and our own Robbie Thorpe actually does a couple of radio shows here at the station. But it's so important to really talk about this bill that the Allen government wants to introduce into Parliament, and you know, slowly our rights are being taken away. And as I said, it is a terrible atrocity that marginalised communities, you know, are being impacted by these powers when those powers already exist.
Yes.
It's approximately 4:22 and this is the Do and Time show, and you're listening to an interview with Farida, who is one of the rally organisers from the Defend Dissent Coalition. Anything else you wanted to ask us, to tell us in conclusion?
I don't know. I think, you know, with long COVID also, sometimes it's hard for me to concentrate for too long. But
that's okay. You've done a great job.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your input today. And see you at the rally tomorrow.
See you there. Bye.
Bye. And that was Farida, who is one of the rally organisers, and she's from the Defend Dissent Coalition. And please rock up to the rally tomorrow at 5:30 at the Victorian Parliament. Here's an announcement talking more about it.
The Victorian State Government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including bans on protective masks and lock-on devices, increased police search powers, restrictions on symbols of resistance such as flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right. Join the fight to defend it at a mass rally hosted by Defend Dissent Coalition on Tuesday, 12th of August, 5:30 p.m. at Parliament House. Defend Dissent Coalition is a 3CR supporter.
Questions flooding into the mind of the concerned young person today.
It's nearly Science Week again, so you better be getting your teams ready for the annual Lost in Science Trivia for 2025.
Yes, Monday the 11th of August, starting at 6 at the Birmingham Hotel in Fitzroy, Melbourne.
All the details on the 3CR website or on the Lost in Science Facebook page.
And if you want to register for a table, email us at lostinsci@gmail.com.
And you're back with the Do and Time show. And you just heard a song by Emily Wadamada. And she's an Aboriginal musician. And before that, you heard an interview with Farida, and she's from the Defend Dissent Coalition, and she's talked about a rally that's happening tomorrow at Parliament at 5:30, looking at a bill that the Allan government wants to introduce into Parliament in regards to police powers and the right to protest. So I wanted to introduce a very special guest here, and I want to introduce Stacey. And Stacey is from Fig Jam, and she'll talk about this in a minute. And also she's also had lived experience of prison. And this show concentrates on lived experience, you know, of prison, lived experience of First Nations, disability, you name it, we have it here. And this show is all about providing a safe environment for people from marginalised communities. Hi, Stacey.
Hi, how are you?
Good, lovely to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm so happy that you've come into the studio. It's absolutely wonderful. So, Stacey, can you just tell us who you are, introduce yourself, and talk a little bit about Fig Jam?
Yeah, cool. Hey, guys, I'm Stacey, a formerly incarcerated woman. So Fig Jam is a formerly incarcerated Girls Justice Advocate Melbourne, and I've been with them for about 4 years now. I've been out of prison for 6.
Fantastic. Tell us about the snap action last week with the, and maybe if you can talk a little bit about the bail laws and what you spoke about.
Yeah, I'm a strong advocate that bail saves lives. Like I said, I was formerly incarcerated and I did 18 months on remand. So I was on long remand. And I guess like it was kind of last minute and I was asked to speak and just super passionate about it, especially after doing 18 months on remand and being removed from community, which was really challenging. And so that was my second time incarcerated. But my first was only for a day. So I went from a day incarcerated to 18 months.
That is gross. That's a gross violation of human rights, isn't it?
Yeah, it was actually. There was a lot of things that were unjust. And it's funny because people were like, did you complain? And it's like, who do you complain to?
You can't.
No.
I mean, who does listen in authority?
No one.
Really? Tell us a little bit more about the injustices that you did suffer, not just as a result of the bail laws, but in regards to your prison experience.
Yeah, look, prison for me was a big turning point. As much as it was really bad, it was that turning point for me. Like, I finally had family support. I finally had somewhere safe to live, conditionally safe, I guess. You know, 3 meals a day, because homelessness is a big part of my story. And also my crimes were survival crimes.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really sad thought, that I didn't have any community supports and that the only safety I could find was in incarcerated. I don't know, like when you're on remand, it's really difficult as well because you're not privy to a lot of the things that people are when they're sentenced. Also too, there's two prisons, women's prisons. So there's maximum security, Dane Phyllis Frost, and then there's Tarrengower, which is minimum security, but you can't get there unless you're sentenced and you've done 3/4 of your sentence. So
essentially you were just forgotten about in remand.
Essentially, yep.
So for listeners that don't know, can you tell us, what is remand?
Yep, so remand is somewhere, so if you're not granted bail, you're held in the prison on remand. Mine is an exceptional case, like 18 months is really unheard of. And so what ended up happening was I got 18 months and time served. I can't really speak to why I was in there for so long, but I think it was the police trying to create a case around the things that I had done. And at least that way they knew that where I was. They considered me a flight risk as well, even though I didn't have a passport and I hadn't left Australia.
Oh, goodness me.
Mm. Yeah, so it was just, you know, really tricky. And, like, for someone who, like I said, you know, essentially it was my first time and trying to navigate that was really tricky as well. And, you know, like I was fortunate enough. I had a job. I was studying. Like I said, 3 meals a day. However, what I didn't have was healthcare services within the prison. I just didn't have the things that I needed and it didn't address my underlying issues of addiction. It just gave me abstinence from substances, but no way of learning how to deal with that.
Exactly. I mean, you were talking before about survival crimes, and you know, perhaps if you'd been given a home and a bed to sleep in, that would have stopped.
Yeah, definitely. And that's another thing. I didn't have an address to be bailed to, so they couldn't keep an eye on me. So they just thought it would be better to keep me incarcerated.
Okay, so basically here's the picture then. So a woman is incarcerated, and there was no effort to find supports on the outside. So just put her in remand.
And I also wasn't, so like when someone's sentenced, they've done the sentence, they're eligible for parole, and then that's when they start getting housing and all those supports. Whereas in for me, I didn't have that caseworker. It was basically, I went to court and they were basically like, yep, you're free to go, time served. So I literally walked out with the clothes that I had on me in court. I didn't have time to pack up my cell. I was able to then go and get my belongings from prison a week later. And, you know, like all of it was destroyed because they packed it for me. You know, they put shampoo in with like paperwork and, you know, it's not a huge thing, but I guess it is a huge thing when that's all you've had for 18 months.
Yes, it is a huge thing. And so when you were actually on remand, right, that was in the city? That wasn't at Dame Phyllis Frost?
No, that was at Dame Phyllis
Frost. Oh, it was. Yep. Oh, so they have that now.
Yep.
No programs at all.
Look, no programs to address my AOD issues. I think we did ICE effects, which is a 3-day thing based around methamphetamines, but it was never ever like, you know, it was telling us the things that ICE does to families and people, and it's like, well, I know that because I've lived it. Yeah. Like, it was just unhelpful.
So really, looking at the bail laws simply didn't give you that equality, did it?
Not at all. I was fortunate. Like I said, I didn't have my family in my life for 17 years, and I was fortunate because my mum became my main support and she was seeing me every week and she'd put money in my account. But that's another thing as well, like, you know, phone calls and stuff, how expensive they are and the wage you get in prison. And at the moment, the conditions are horrific.
Tell us about that.
Yep. So I actually volunteer. I go in fortnightly and I run an AOD service to help women find recovery. And, you know, they're constantly being locked down now. It's forced lockdowns, scheduled lockdowns. Women have to move with slips. You know, it went from 240 people to 365 within months because they're not getting bail anymore. It's just really, really horrible. They've now capped one of my sessions at 25 women, and you think about 365 women and only 25 can attend fortnightly.
What do you mean they capped it?
Well, so because now women are moving around with slips.
Oh.
So, yeah, there's only a certain amount that are allowed to be in the one spot at a certain time.
So they're restricting movements?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really because of the overcrowding too, isn't it?
I don't...
It still isn't an excuse.
I think they're saying staffing issues. But no, it's not an excuse. And you're talking about women that don't really have many opportunities inside. And like, I just worry about the harm that we're causing people. And like I said earlier, it's for survival crimes. And I don't know, like I get really passionate about this, that like, yes, we've done the wrong thing by society. However, we still have rights and we still deserve things. And I think that gets lost when people think about prisoners and incarceration. Like, it's so negative today.
It really is negative, and it's getting worse and worse, and they're building more and more prisons and no communities.
Yeah.
So these new bail laws that they've put in, is it worse?
Well, I believe so, because they're saying if you're a re-offender, then you're not granted bail. However, yeah. I mean, you think about survival crimes and you think about women and addiction, you know, or going back to domestic relationships, and it's like it's going to continue to happen.
Exactly.
So therefore, these women are going to continue to be incarcerated. And I don't know, like you put someone in a place and there's no rehabilitation or there's no help or support, and it's like, well, how do you stop that recidivism?
Exactly.
You know, and then institutionalization, and that's all people know. And like, I really, sorry, this is a bit of a sidebar, but like, I really fear for our youth as well.
Me too.
Like, I just think, you know, yeah, it's just so unjust and, like, ripping people away from their communities and culture and, you know, putting them in a foreign place and they're all alone and they just have to survive. And it's like, you know, we're locking people up for survival crimes and then they need to learn how to survive in a place like that.
Exactly. I mean, well, it's not you know, this is very relevant because you've got youth and then they end up in the adult prison system and they're actually doing that before, you know, when they're still when they're kids.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you know, you've got the opportunity to help and support children or our youth and instead we're just locking them in cages.
It's really disgusting.
It breaks my heart. It really does.
And you've done a podcast here at 3CR?
Yeah, yeah. So I got to do that with Fig Jam and that's called Untold Stories of Injustice.
I believe it's also on the 3CR website. I've seen it and it's pretty fantastic. So see if listeners can tune into that.
Thank you.
Can you tell us more about the Fig Jam Collective? What other roles you play in that?
Yeah, so I guess for me, like I'll only speak from my experience, but for me what Fig Jam, what it's done is it's given me a place to land. Society tends to turn their back on criminalised folk. And we get a really bad rep and I don't know, like there's a lot of mental health services, there's like a lot of AOD services, but there's not a lot of formerly incarcerated services or that I'm aware of. And I don't know, like, yeah, it just gave me a place to land. Not only that, it's also taught me how to gain a professional voice.
Yeah.
In some really cool spaces. Like, you know, we have seats at tables that we never thought that we would, just that advocacy. And it's also like a peer mentorship as well. Like we help women, trans, gender diverse folk who are coming out and give them a place to land as well.
That's fantastic. I mean, because I have – actually, I think Nina is also from – she's from Flat Out but also from Fig Jam as well, because I've interviewed Nina on this show couple of times. In fact, Nina's the one that made the introduction. Hi, Nina. Shout out.
Nina's my soul sister. Oh, she's brilliant.
She's really brilliant, that one. And, yeah, I've actually played some of her audio from the rally. I couldn't get hold of your audio. I'll have to get that happening.
So embarrassing.
Nah.
But you know what? Like, I've never been to a protest before. Not only have I never been, like, I've never spoken at one. But I guess, like, being so passionate about it and that bail does save lives, especially with mental health and the crisis at the moment, you know, and the what women are subject to, it's like it just kind of, it came naturally. I'm going to admit as well, like, I see police as harm, which I'm not sure that's appropriate to say either, but
no,
I will.
No, it's okay.
And they just multiplied and multiplied and multiplied, and I think there was about 35 on the day and I was like, oh, my gosh, I don't think I can do this because they have caused me harm. But then the people that were there to support and it was like, actually, they need to hear this story. They need to hear what happens to people. And, like, I guess bringing that human back to the situation, right?
Mm. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, we talk a lot about police on this show and it's not always pretty. Mm. Well, it never is pretty here because this show covers a lot about not just police powers that's being introduced into Parliament, but also, you know, people have been demonised and victimised by police for many, many years. Mm. And so you've been traumatised by the police?
Yeah, like I remember one night I was strip searched 4 times within police custody, you know, like, and I don't know, it just makes me feel sick. Like one was on the side of the road. They had to wait for a female to come on the side of the road and search me. And then I ended up in custody. They took me to a police station. I couldn't be housed there. Sorry, they strip searched me. I couldn't be housed there. So they sent me to another police station. I was then strip searched again the whole time I'd been in their custody. And then couldn't house me there. And the last place that I landed, they also strip searched me as well.
You know, this type of thing makes my blood boil.
Yeah.
And these are the stories that are really important to actually to be aired on the Do and Time show because that's what we're here for. Mm. In fact, when the show first started, which was about 20 years ago now, the show actually had a lot of people that had been incarcerated and I didn't create the show, but now it's just me. And and you know, I haven't been incarcerated, but I know a lot of people that have, and I've been involved with doing many, many interviews with people who have been incarcerated, Aboriginal people, and we look a lot at deaths in custody as well.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, did you have much to do with your Aboriginal sisters inside?
Yeah, I did.
It's cool though. You don't have to answer the question if you don't want to.
It's really hard, right? Because I feel like obviously I'm not a First Nations woman.
Sure, no.
Huge ally though.
Of course. Yep.
And just the way that society treats First Nation people and like just incarcerated and throwing people in cages. It's heartbreaking, and it's heartbreaking because it's the continuously same people coming through those doors. You know, and like you talk about those survival crimes and like obviously not having the AOD support.
Yeah.
And it's just
it's gross.
It's so gross. It's so gross. And I just recently went to Northern Territory.
Yep.
Which I've never been before. And it was so lovely to be in a place where white people aren't the minority.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like that was just amazing, and like them letting us be a part of their heritage and their history and like inviting us to share that even after everything that colonization has done to these people. Like, I don't know, it was such a spiritual place. And then again, like, you know, walking down the streets and like the CCTV footage for the police everywhere and like, you know, these cages on the back of cars. I went past the police district there and there was like about 40 police cars.
Oh, wow.
It was disgusting. Like,
it really is.
So disgusting.
And
I guess too for me, like witnessing First Nations people being ripped away from country and from their elders and their culture, being incarcerated, you know, like it's just, it's disgusting.
It is. And, you know, this is on a different note. What was the... I'm sure the food in prison was not that nutritious.
Well, actually, I'm going to say DPFC. So the women cooked for the women.
Good.
Yes. And when I was there, the food was amazing.
Oh.
Yeah. They also had a cafe as well in the visit centre. It hasn't been open since COVID. But that was a huge highlight because it was so cheap and it was such a privileged job for women to work in there. But it was so cheap, and I remember my mum could bring in $20, and that gave us both a main meal, a coffee, and a cake, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you were able then to reestablish communication with your mum.
Yeah, it was really special, actually.
I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Are you still talking to her now?
Yeah, she's got a lot of health problems at the moment, which I'm actually there for her today, which is amazing. Like, our relationship was so fractured, but through all of this, it's healed.
I'm really glad.
Yeah,
and what about, like, with the bail laws?
Mm.
So basically you didn't have access to parole.
No.
And they put you inside because of having no fixed address, which is that's discriminatory in itself.
Mm.
It just went on and on, didn't it?
Yeah, it's and that's the problem, right? Like, it's just this vicious cycle. And like I spoke about AOD issues, but I had mental health. And so in community, I couldn't address my mental health until I addressed my addiction issues, but I couldn't address my addiction issues until I addressed my mental health. So the only place for me to land was prison, you know, and like as far as mental health and addiction goes in there, like, I don't know, and I'm going to say this as well, like I really pride myself on this, like it's actually not hard to get substances in prison, however I chose not to use.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, huge turning point for me. I was crazy, but I didn't use.
And what sort of supports did you didn't have much support at all?
No. Wow. And I pretty much put my head down and did my time. Like, I didn't cause trouble. Actually, I used to always get written up for being out of bounds.
Right.
And I also used to get written up for food trafficking, and not in the sense where I'd go and buy up for canteen and then sell to other people. I have a huge addiction for fruit.
Wow.
So
food trafficking?
Yeah. So when you're in the like the cells or the lockdown units, fruit is provided, but when you go to an open unit, you have to buy your own fruit. And if you already go into an established unit, like that money, you don't see it. Like you just eat what everyone else eats. It's basically theirs. So I used to hover out the front of other units and ask them to get me some fruit. And so they were forever writing me up for food trafficking. But it's funny because what got me in there was those survival crimes of stealing food. And then I was forever getting written up for wanting more food. But, yeah.
Well, you know, this all goes back to 1788, doesn't it, where, you know, Australia is a penal colony, isn't it? And you have people being shipped from England for stealing a banana.
Yeah.
You know, so survival crimes even goes back in history, and it's still going on today, isn't it?
It's crazy because it hasn't changed at all. I mean, we just don't hang people today.
Well, not yet. You never know what can happen.
Right? Wouldn't put it past it, to be honest with you. But
but I'm so glad that you've come. You've been really generous with your time and sharing stuff. Was there anything else that you wanted to look at?
No, I just to tell people it's just so unjust. And like I said earlier, I know we've done the wrong things. However, supports and communities are needed, not punishment and prisons. Like it's just harmful. And I guess like a lot of women go in with trauma. So like you put the system on top of that and it's just horrific.
Yeah. I mean, even with strip searches, for example, that is the most despicable thing that police do, and also that prison officers as well, because what about people that have been sexually abused as children?
100%.
Okay. And not just that. I mean, it shouldn't be happening. There has to be another way.
I mean, you go to the airport and they can put you in full body scanners.
Yeah.
Like, what's, like, ugh.
It's disgusting.
It's so disgusting. And, when you come from that trauma and people are like, well, you did the wrong thing. However, like, it just doesn't justify it. And I remember a police officer saying to me, like, I don't enjoy this either. I was like, well, that's fine because you're not the one taking your clothes off.
And why did this police officer, why were they doing it in the first place?
Right.
Okay, so.
It needs to stop.
It needs to stop. Like, it beggars belief. And unfortunately, what tends to happen with a lot of in the police force is that you've got them using that as a weapon against women.
Mm-hmm.
And there need to be more safe houses and more homes for people.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I mean, I've been homeless myself.
Mm.
And it's a horrible feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Where
especially
you have
when you're a woman.
Yeah.
I can only speak from experience of being a woman, but like you're forever having a target on your back and and then you endure all that trauma throughout that, and then you're taken into police custody and you're treated like an absolute animal.
Yeah.
For just surviving.
But now it's different. Like now you're in Fig Jam and you're doing a lot of really amazing work and you're working as well.
Yeah. So I actually work in the criminal justice system as well. I'm a peer support worker in a lived experience space.
Yep.
And I help advocate for people and consumer and for their rights. Which I have a lot of that to thank to Fig Jam, you know, because it taught me how to hold my space in these spaces.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I'd love to have you back soon, actually.
Cool. Thank
you. It would be amazing to do some more, you know, some more work together on the show if you're into it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for your time.
No, and pretty soon we're going to be finishing the show because it's nearly 5 o'clock. So I'm just going to go out. Do an announcement. Where's your mic? Oh, yeah, it is on. an announcement, and then we'll go from there.
Welcome to the Seawood District 3066.
Join us for a concert, speeches, and food at Collingwood Yards to raise awareness for International Overdose Day. Come together as a community, pay our respects for those that have passed and survivors, friends and families. Performances by Resident Frequency, catering by Food Not Bombs, supported by Inner Space Crew and CoHealth on the 29th of August, 2 to 4 p.m. Resident Frequency are a 3CR supporter.
You are a shadow, transparent, a memory once human. You pass through me.
And you're back with the Doin' Time show, and it's approximately 4:55, and we've got Climate Action coming up next, and we're going to be going on with our theme song, Black Fella, White Fella by the Rumpy Band, and Stacey is still with me, and it's goodbye from Marissa, and...
Goodbye from Stacey, thank you.
And it's so lovely to have you, Stacey. And pretty soon, we're going to be going out now with our song, Black Fella, White Fella by the Rumpy Band. Stay safe and stay tuned every Monday, 4 to 5, for the Doin' Time show. Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.